Today we're talking with Mike Whitlatch. He's Vice President of Global Energy and Procurement with UPS. For me, Mike's kind of our green energy guru. If I have any question at all about the alternative fuel space, he's my first phone call. Thanks for being here, Mike.
Great. Glad to be here.
You're kind of our green energy guru, is that fair to say?
Well, I've been in the energy business now for a little over a decade, and UPS's alternative fleet is by far one of the largest rolling on the planet today. I mean, we've got well over 8,000 vehicles, and we're displacing a significant amount of traditional fossil-based fuels.
Right. So how do you get into this? Was this something you were always interested in, or did it just kind of happen along your journey, so to speak?
You know, at 30 years with UPS, you have an opportunity to do a lot of things. My background is actually engineering. I started off with UPS when we started buying airplanes. I was actually an avionics engineer, so kind of navigated in that electrical arena. And then after several years of that, had a chance to come down here and start to participate in our commodities, which at that time were just the natural gas, jet fuel, diesel, those types of commodities. And so it's kind of an evolved role and responsibility moving from traditional fuels into the next generation of fuels.
I would imagine there's all kinds of challenges on your plate. This is a very exciting space. Things are evolving and changing all the time. What is it you're aiming to do more than anything else when you come to work?
Well, there's two things for me that you have to balance. It's the tactical day-to-day, which means that somewhere in the world today, we've got a supply chain issue as it relates to fuels, an outage, a constraint, something that we have to work around. So, you know, we're responsible for ensuring the entire operation has fuel to run. And as that, there's always things that pop up. I mean, just here recently, we had the Atlanta bridge collapse. So we actually have fuel that's a little bit south of there that we try to figure out now, how does that impact us getting fuel to the rest of the operation in and around the Atlanta area? That's balanced with the strategy of how do we move forward and innovate, and especially in this space of alternative fuels. So if you can't manage both those, the tactical side and the strategic side, that creates for some interesting days, and that's why I love doing it.
You know, truthfully speaking, we're a massive logistics and transportation company. We move products through 220 countries and territories. That comes with an environmental cost inherently, right? It's a challenge and a problem, but if anyone can figure out how to move things in more environmentally friendly ways, you would think it would be someone that's a transportation provider, and it's imperative on us, perhaps more than your average company, to find some of these innovative solutions. Right. Is that fair to say?
It's fair to say. I mean, we consume resources. We are a large consumer of resources, and there's only a finite amount of those resources on the planet. So we're also a supply chain provider, which has to do with, you know, at the end of the day, moving things or transforming things from A to B and doing it efficiently. So it's a good space for us to be in, because we have to figure out how to use those finite resources much more efficiently if we're going to be sustainable and if we're going to continue to grow. And ultimately, we have to figure out how to leave the planet in a better shape than when we first got here.
Right. And so you've said you've been doing this for a decade. Have you been surprised by how rapidly the space has changed? I mean, it seems like we're talking about a new kind of hot alternative source almost, you know, every month.
Yeah, we always talk about this concept called Moore's Law, which is the doubling of efficiency in a very short span of time. And the technology that's involved with finding solutions or actually converting energy from one state to another, and that's what this is really about. This is really about, how do we convert existing energy, because it's finite, from one state that's not really usable or obvious today into a state that we can actually use it? And that is, to a large degree, technology-based. Mm-hmm. And so what we've seen is that compression or acceleration of technology over time. And as a result, we're seeing some pretty neat things happen in that space that could have taken, you know, decades prior, that are happening year over year.
Mm-hmm. What are some of your favorite things that you're seeing? Where you go, man, that's pretty cool.
So for us, I guess there's been kind of two things. One is this development of drop-in fuels. And we'll talk a little bit about that, I'm sure, a little bit later in the podcast. But where we've had to depend on fuels that were not fully compatible with existing infrastructure, existing equipment, terminals, pipelines, those types of things. We've now, in probably the last 5 years, seen the development of these actually synthetic fuels, These are fuels that are mirror image copies of petroleum crude-based fuels. And since they are a mirror image, a clone, as we sometimes look at them from that perspective, they can be dropped in, intermingled, burned, and used. And they come from sources that have less impact on the planet. And so these drop-in fuels have been a real game changer. I mean, UPS was one of the first to drop-in diesel. We call that renewable diesel. Again, it's much different than these first-generation fuels. We call it an advanced biofuel. After we adopted it, we've seen other large companies and even municipalities begin to adopt it. So it's kind of neat to see, you know, what happens in that space when a company like UPS puts its weight behind it.
Got it. And so when I hear you talk about all these different things, what I'm kind of hearing inherently is a diversity in source that you hear it all the time, and all of the above approach. Do you think this is the most effective way to find the most sustainable path forward? And by that, I mean exploring a number of different things, or do you think we're better served investing our resources, money, et cetera, into a couple main alternative sources?
Diversity is the only path forward right now until we figure it out, and here's why. We're dealing with this issue, like I just talked about, of how do you efficiently transform energy from one state to another? Going from a crude petroleum-based infrastructure where, you know, there are oceans and oceans of energy below the surface, and we talk about that from a three-dimensional perspective, to something that is now above the surface, two-dimensionally, there's just not enough surface area to do this. So, you know, if you think about the context of UPS, even if we went and totally went off of crude oil and went to a biomass type replacement, you got to grow it, you got to harvest it, you got to figure out how to transform it efficiently, and that takes a lot of space. I mean, for a company like UPS, we're talking on the order of magnitude of, if you went to a biomass type source, millions of acres. So just to hang our hat on one type of source, meaning biomass or alternative fuels, that's why we have to look at things like electrification. That's why we have to look at things like hydrogen. That's why we have to look at other sources of fuel to replace petroleum. Because this game of scale is very difficult for folks to comprehend.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think a lot of times one of the easy things to do is look at all these different things and wonder, you know, why aren't we just able to implement it? Can you talk a little bit about the challenge of scaling it? Because if you don't have scale, you really don't have a solution at all, right?
Right, right. Well, just to give you an idea, you know, the average U.S. consumer, me, you, driving our cars back and forth, we burn probably on the order of magnitude, let's say 500 gallons of fuel a year, just in fuel. We're not talking about electricity that powers the homes or keeps the lights on. We're just talking about fuel for your car. Again, yields, you know, right now in some of the biofuel arenas, we're talking anywhere from, say, 100 on the low end to 200 gallons on the top end per acre. So that means that you and I, we got to have somewhere north of 2 acres. Right? So when you start looking at that from a perspective of scale, you start to realize you got to think differently. So where folks might be focused on converting your biomass, whether it's, you know, could range from soybeans to jatropha flowers at the end of the day into a biofuel, that same technology can actually convert CO2 coming off of a power plant, or CO, you know, carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide. There's carbon in it. Mm-hmm. And so this innovation leads to, well, if I can transform carbon, you know, that's the carbon and hydrogen from a plant or a, you know, biomass source, that hydrogen and carbon exist in other forms. And so what you see is this innovation leads to a pathway you really never thought about before. Mm-hmm. Even though it may not be the answer, you know, with, say, a biofuels economy, it leads you to other pathways.
That just going down that path, you can almost stumble into new eureka moments.
Absolutely.
Do you have any examples of that you could think of that we've seen?
Well, that's probably the easiest one. I mean, we embarked on the biofuel path. We actually started this on the aviation side. On the ground fuel side, you have diesel, you have gasoline, you have a variety of products that you can power transportation needs. In aviation, you're limited to kerosene. That's really what it is. Jet fuel is just a high-end kerosene. And so it's a single source fuel that you have to be able to replace. And there's been a lot of work in that space. And again, one of the innovative companies, you know, stumbled upon this of, you know, how do you actually, you know, get to the carbon and hydrogen source? And when you look around, a lot of the emitters and a lot of the pollution is carbon, right? It's CO2. There's a whole host of those. And being able to extract that carbon and combine it with hydrogen from another source, you can actually make that drop in synthetic fuel. You can actually, you know, convert and transform. So that's some of the innovation that we've seen coming out of this.
Yeah, as you mentioned, I think when we're all collectively looking at our own carbon footprints, a lot of that comes from just the amount of fuel we consume in our drive to work, drive around town. How important, both from a consumer perspective and a business perspective, is vehicle development, right? The vehicle development has to keep pace with the fuel development, or else they're out of whack.
It's a chicken and egg, right? So it's do you develop the new vehicle? Well, let's say it's a fuel cell or hydrogen-based, you know, or electrification. And do you then adapt the infrastructure around it? Or do you look at the existing infrastructure and try to develop a solution, an actual vehicle around that? But you've hit it on the head. I mean, you and I are the primary drivers of this, right? I mean, in the U.S., and this is all, I always like to use numbers, but in the U.S., the gasoline that you and I use, I think last year it was 9.3 million barrels per day. That's 390 million gallons per day that you got to figure out how to do something with.
Right.
It's a lot of fuel. So, you know, for us, it's you know, the exciting part is that when we look around at the infrastructure that's available to us, you know, things like electrification become kind of obvious, right? I mean, we use it to power the homes, and we use it to bring lights on around the world. So the infrastructure is there, and it is vast, and there's a lot of connectivity. So trying to figure out how to connect those dots with the existing infrastructure is probably the first thing to bridge us to this next generation of energy.
Got it. And what do you drive, just out of curiosity?
Well, I have a couple of different automobiles. One, I would call it a gas guzzler, and then the other is an electric car. I actually, about 3 years ago, purchased a Leaf on a whim. It was kind of a bet between me and somebody else as to how would this perform. And actually, when I went in and drove it, I left with it.
Really? What was it that was so appealing to you?
The performance is phenomenal. I mean, I come from, you know, the combustion age with sports cars and high horsepower and smoking loud dragons, you know, beast of rubber, you know, out there. And when I drove this thing, there was no noise. The radio was like crystal clear and high def. It was peacefully quiet. The power and the acceleration gave up nothing to the vehicle I was driving. And then what I found over the last couple of years is the maintenance. Even taking the car back to the dealership, you know, there's scheduled intervals. Yeah. Their system's built on combustion motors. So you get the notices that it needs to go back to the dealership, and everybody just looks at you, and the tech goes, I don't really know what to do. There's really nothing to do with this, but, you know, how about I wash the car and vacuum it, and we'll send you on your way. And so they don't even have these maintenance programs that are designed for these vehicles. And so for me, especially at UPS, this idea of being able to reduce maintenance. And maintenance is just the consumption of resources, right? So the oil that we put into our trucks as we change the oil, the brake pads that we go through, the brake wear that comes off of them, these are all intangibles that add up not only to efficiency, right, but also add up to, again, a reduction in the use of resources. So I'm really excited about the electrification piece. Solving for range and solving for those things, there, you know, we're moving forward in that. And you're going to see some big advancements in this in the next decade.
Mm-hmm. As we approach Earth Day, I think maybe a good question for you is, how do you look at corporate responsibility and personal responsibility? And by that, I mean, it seems that you can't have one without the other, that in a way, corporations or the business side has to do their part, and the personal consumption side goes with that too. How do you kind of balance those two different camps when you look at the issue of just creating a more sustainable world for everybody?
You can't separate them, right? Because corporations are comprised of people. So you can't have these two different ideals out there, right? And as a company, you know, we consume resources. So we have an obligation, right? We have an obligation to figure out how to use those resources as efficiently as possible. And then how do we leave the planet in a better spot than it was? And I say this from a personal perspective because, you know, I'm an avid outdoorsman. I enjoy, you know, whether it's roaming the Rockies or roaming the wilderness of Alaska. And I think once you do that and you see vast beauty of this gift that we've been given, you actually stop and think, you know, how do you balance development, right? The needs of individuals and things with what's happening on the planet. And I always go back to, you know, my son was a Boy Scout and an Eagle Scout. And the motto that they always instilled is, you leave no trace, right? And so it's a simple motto, easy for second graders and third graders, but it's also easy for Eagle Scouts and young men to understand that, you know, when we're out there and when we're living on this planet, how do you leave no trace? And I think if you think about that, the individual and the corporation mindset can come together.
Okay. And let me ask you this, though. Is it any more challenging, as simple and obtainable as that goal is, to get that message across when the price of oil is so low? When you see that price go down, I think it's right or wrong kind of human nature to think, well, this might not be as big a deal right now because it doesn't affect my pocketbook. How do you kind of get past that mentality that is definitely out there?
Well, it starts with the consumer. It starts with you, right? It starts with me.
And I'm going to
we buy things, right? We buy things, we do things, we consume things, and we drive corporations and companies to provide those goods and services. So if you're not changing your own personal behavior, then, you know, I think it's hard to ask corporations to change to that same mindset. So I think it first starts with, how do you impact the planet, right? Because you can definitely affect what you do.
Most of the time,
yeah. It's all about choices, right? We all make choices. Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, it comes down to, how do we make the right choices and change our behavior?
On that note, and it makes sense, especially from a UPS perspective, is at the end of the day, this is a numbers game. Do you think there's something we could all do collectively, you, me, everyone, that would actually make the biggest difference in helping us go down a greener path?
Well, I think there's things you do in your daily life, and the recycling side and simple things of turning off lights and always yelling at the kids to turn this light off or turn that off. But at the end of the day, you know, it does start to make an impact. And we've seen that in the cars that we drive, right? The average efficiency of the cars that we drive and the gas mileage, you might not accept 10 miles per gallon anymore. And it's more common to see the 30 miles per gallon plus. So just making decisions. We even talk about UPS as an enabler to this, an enabler to benefit, right?
In a good way.
In a great way, right? Instead of going to every store and making trips in your automobile, you know, we provide this level of density and service where it actually saves those miles, right? The mile that we don't drive is the greenest mile. The gallon we don't burn is the greenest gallon. So I think we have to think about things in that perspective.
Mm-hmm. This might be a really tough question. I'm not sure, because you're playing in so many different sandboxes, right? What is your favorite alternative fuel source that we're experimenting with that's getting implemented right now?
There's two things that are most exciting to me right now, and that is the solar and the potential electrification of transportation. It's going to be tough to do this in heavy duty, but in what we call light duty or medium duties vehicles, it's easy to do. But just solar, you know, in the standpoint of what I've seen happen in solar over the last 10 years, moving from big, bulky panels that are heavy. It's kind of like flat screen TVs. It's kind of like going from your old TV to the first plasma, and it was great, right? But it's
not that great.
It still consumed a lot of energy, and it was heavy. And then we went to the flat screen, and then we went to these thin, almost paper, you know, these things are 20-pound LED, LCD modules we're putting on the walls. Same thing's happening with solar, right? So the form factor, meaning how small it is going down, and the power density is going up. The output's going up. And then you're seeing things like thin film coatings that can actually serve as solar panels. There will come a day where every building window, instead of having your low-E glazing on it, will have some sort of solar film on it. You still see through it, but it will capture and harness the power of the sun. So this advance in solar is very, very exciting. Or think about being able to spray a coating, an actual coating like paint, is actually a solar collector. So these types of things that are happening could transform how we harness the power of the sun, which is a gift that's sitting right there in front of us and difficult. But then the electrification and use of that is obviously the next piece of that. There's a generation ahead of us, that a whole part of the world that wants to come into the light. And so this ability to be able to provide electricity or some sort of power to those. And this is not just power, as me and you and I think about it in this room, powering this microphone or powering the lights in here, but just being able to provide power to provide clean drinking water, the filtration and the pumps to do that, power to provide basic medical necessities. All this is coming forward, and we've got to figure out, you know, so for me, it's exciting. It's exciting to see the advances in solar and battery technology that ultimately leads to some level of electrification. Some of the other manufacturers have already cracked the 200-mile range. So range anxiety is slowly going away, right? So I had range anxiety with my Leaf, you know, because it's, you know, has about an 80-mile range.
You weren't sure you're going to make it home.
Well, there's times, you know, in traffic or a detour that you sit there and you look at your gauge and you go, well, this is going to be a problem, right? What's interesting is it makes you change your mindset about where you drive.
You go, do I really need to go?
Do I need to go? I mean, you almost start doing the Google Map type, you know, progression in your mind. So it changes the way you think. It changes the way you operate. It's pretty exciting.
That's pretty cool, man.
Pretty cool.
I like, especially in the solar and the electric space, those kind of changes that you just talked about. Is that something we're seeing in the next couple of years? Is that something that's going to take a decade? What do you think the implementation timeline for that is?
It's going to take time, and whether that's a decade or whether that's longer. I mean, it took us over 100 years to get into this situation, right? So it's going to take us some time to get out. Again, the cost of doing this is continuing to come down. The difference in price spreads between a traditional automobile and an electrified or a hybrid, at the end of the day, a hybrid, is going to continue to shrink. So I think it's just a question, right? I've seen when we went through high crude prices, you wouldn't see a truck on the street. In fact, I have a friend who had a dealership up at the Ford, and he said he used to leave the keys in the Ford Expeditions and hope someone would take them off the lot. But then all of a sudden, you know, crude prices are down, and guess what? Our behavior changes. And we soon forget. And guess what? That's the leading seller now is a vehicle that gets somewhere, you know, sub 20 miles per gallon, right? So it's going to take some time. And the question is how quickly is the consumer willing to adopt and change?
And for the innovation to truly flourish, you need buy-in first from the consumer.
Absolutely.
Regardless of prices, you need this consistency of principle that this is important and this is something we're going to do, regardless of potential cost, within reason, of course.
Well, there you go, right?
I just contradicted my own self as I tried to get on my soapbox.
That's why it's so hard.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of exciting work in this space in the years ahead. Thanks for being here, Mike.
It's been great. Thanks.